Right now, let's turn to 2 Kings chapter 6, verses 24 through 33. In these verses, we read of the horrible conditions that existed in Samaria during the time of a siege by the Syrian army. 2 Kings 6, verse 24. And it happened after this that Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, gathered all his army and went up and besieged Samaria. And there was a great famine in Samaria. And indeed they besieged it until a donkey's head was sold for 80 shekels of silver and 1/4 of a cab of dove droppings for 5 shekels of silver. Then as the king of Israel was passing by on the wall, a woman cried out to him, saying, "Help my lord, O king." And he said, "If the Lord does not help you, where can I find help for you? From the threshing floor or from the winepress?" Then the king said to her, "What is troubling you?" And she answered, "This woman said to me, 'Give your son that we may eat him today, and we will eat my son tomorrow.' So we boiled my son and ate him. And I said to her on the next day, 'Give your son that we may eat him.' But she has hidden her son." Now it happened, when the king heard the words of the woman, that he tore his clothes. And as he passed by on the wall, the people looked, and there underneath he had sackcloth on his body. Then he said, "God do so to me and more also, if the head of Elisha, the son of Shaphat, remains on him today." But Elisha was sitting in his house, and the elders were sitting with him. And the king sent a man ahead of him, but before the messenger came to him, he said to the elders, "Do you see how this son of a murderer has sent someone to take away my head? Look, when the messenger comes, shut the door and hold him fast at the door. Is not the sound of his master's feet behind him?" And while he was still talking with them, there was the messenger coming down to him and said to him, "Surely this calamity is from the Lord. Why should I wait for the Lord any longer?" All right, first of all, we'll take some background notes. In verse 24, "And it happened after this." After this, that is, after the Syrians had stopped their raiding parties into the land of Israel, as we saw in verse 23. How much later, we don't know. But now Ben-Hadad, probably Ben-Hadad II, comes down from the north with his entire army. And this time he besieges Samaria. Samaria was the capital of the northern kingdom of Israel. That's where King Jehoram was. That's where Elisha lived. Now, in those days, a siege would go on for months, sometimes more than a year. In a siege, the invading army would surround the walled city and close it off. No one could get out. No one could escape. Supplies could not get in. And as a result, as this siege would go on for months, there would be great famine in the city. The people would literally be starved to surrender. We see here that the conditions got so bad that a donkey's head sold for 80 shekels of silver. That's about 2 pounds of silver. And remember, a donkey was an unclean animal to the Jewish people. So for this to be used for food, you can see how bad the conditions were. And a cab or pint of dove's dung, used probably not for food, but for fuel, would be sold for 5 shekels of silver. So conditions are pretty bad, but that's not the worst of it. We see in verses 28 and 29 that conditions were so bad that some of the people had actually stooped to the sin of cannibalism, even eating their own children. Horrible conditions. Now, when Jehoram confronts this horrible condition of cannibalism, he decides that he's not going to wait any longer, and he's going to kill Elisha and surrender to the Syrians. So he sends a messenger out to kill Elisha. He follows him. And so in verse 33, the king arrives behind the messenger, and it's the king who says, "Surely this calamity is from the Lord. Why should I wait for the Lord any longer?" Namely, "I'm going to go ahead and surrender the city." It's at that point that Elisha, as we'll see in chapter 7, comes up with this good news that, hey, guess what? The siege is going to be over very shortly. But now that brings us to our doctrinal points from this passage. What is the Bible teaching us here? Doctrinal point number one. Man's cruelty to man is not God's fault. Man's cruelty to man is not God's fault. In verses 28 and 29, we see man's cruelty to man for sure. Two women making a covenant to systematically kill their children and eat them. How could God allow this to happen? This was not God's fault. In fact, God had predicted that this would take place as a consequence of departing from Him. Turn to Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 52 and following. Let me read. Under the law, this is what's said in Deuteronomy 28, the cursings of the law. If the people would not follow the Lord, here's what would happen. They shall besiege you at all your gates until your high and fortified walls in which you trust come down throughout all your land. And they shall besiege you at all your gates throughout all your land which the Lord your God has given you. You shall eat the fruit of your own body, the flesh of your sons and your daughters, whom the Lord your God has given you, in the siege and desperate straits in which your enemy shall distress you. The man among you who is sensitive and very refined will be hostile toward his brother, toward the wife of his bosom, and toward the rest of his children whom he leaves behind, so that he will not give any of them the flesh of his children whom he will eat, because he has nothing left in the siege and desperate straits in which your enemy shall distress you at all your gates. The tender and delicate woman among you, who would not venture to set the sole of her foot on the ground because of her delicateness and sensitivity, will refuse to the husband of her bosom and to her son and her daughter, her afterbirth or placenta, which comes out from between her feet, and her children whom she bears, for she will eat them secretly for lack of all things in the siege and desperate straits in which your enemy shall distress you at all your gates. Man's cruelty to man is not God's fault. God had predicted if his people would turn away from him, turn away from the moral values and standards of his word, this is what would happen. This was not God's fault. Man's cruelty to man, then and today, is not God's fault. It's the result of man departing from God and from God's standards. What's going on in Rwanda today in tribal warfare? It's not God's fault. If mankind would turn to God and to His standards, man's cruelty to man would stop. It would taper off. In fact, that's the only way it will stop. The cruelty to man that we see being practiced in this country right now, in the killing of the unborn, abortion, is only the tip of the iceberg of what it's going to get to if this country does not turn back to God and to biblical standards. Man's cruelty to man is not God's fault. Doctrinal point number two. Man shifts the blame when things go wrong. Man shifts the blame when things go wrong. We certainly can see that taught here as well. Jehoram blamed everything and everybody but himself for the problem in his kingdom. Verse 31, he blames Elisha. He thinks if he beheads Elisha, things will get better. In verse 27, he blames God when he says to this woman, if the Lord does not help you, where can I find help from you? In other words, it's not my fault. You see him directing the blame toward God there? In verse 33, he says, surely this calamity is from the Lord. Why should I wait for the Lord any longer? Now, what he should have said is, I recognize this calamity is from the Lord because of our sin, because of my sin. I will repent. But no, he shifts the blame even to God. That's exactly what Adam did. What did Adam say when God confronted him in the garden? Genesis 3 and verse 12. When God says in verse 11, have you eaten from the tree of which I commanded you that you should not eat? Then the man said, the woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree and I ate. Shifting of the blame right to God. So the point is, man shifts the blame when things go wrong. When was the last time you heard a government official in our country say, "It's my fault"? Has that ever happened? Man always shifts the blame. We might say, "Oh, that's not Christians." But no, Christians shift the blame as well. It's never our fault, right? We were the unfortunate victim of circumstances. It's because I wasn't born with better looks or more brains or more talent, or it's the circumstances, or, you know, I wasn't born with connections. There are cases where it may not be our fault. But let's face it, we always try to shift the blame. We even blame God. Anytime we say things like, "Well, things are wrong because I wasn't born with better looks or more brains or more talent or more connection," we're actually blaming God. We may not be as bad as King Jehoram was, but we're guilty of the same sin, blaming God. Man shifts the blame when things go wrong. Now, that's pretty practical, but we can even get more practical. Practical application number one. Let's listen so that God does not have to shout. Let's listen so that God does not have to shout. God is shouting in this event. None of this had to happen. God had said if the people had followed him, he'd bless them and bless their land. But he had said if they did not follow, they would be disciplined, they would be judged. These things would happen. And now God is shouting, but the nation is not listening. Well, how about us? Are we listening? You remember C.S. Lewis said something like this: God whispers in our pleasures, but shouts in our pain. Is God whispering or shouting to you right now? 1 Corinthians 11:31 says this: "For if we would judge ourselves, we would not be judged." Let me paraphrase that verse. Let's listen so that God does not have to shout. That's exactly what that verse is saying. Many Christians have to learn the hard way. Let's listen so that God does not have to shout. Practical application number two. Let's expect to suffer at times for sins that are not our own. Let's expect to suffer at times for sins that are not our own. I think we can see that from this passage as well. The famine of Samaria was not Elisha's fault, but Elisha suffered along with the rest of the people. Food was scarce. Elisha had a hard time getting food. Prices were high. Elisha had to pay those prices. We don't read of God miraculously providing food or money for Elisha. He could have, but he didn't. He suffered along with the rest of the people. Let's expect to suffer at times for sins that are not our own. If God were to choose to bring this country, our nation, to its knees through an economic crisis like we've never known before, we would all suffer, even though we're not directly responsible. God is judging the nation. People would be out of work. You wouldn't be able to find a job. You wouldn't be able to afford a car or gas. Christian families would suffer. Your family would suffer. God may let it happen to possibly turn this nation around. But we can expect to suffer at times for sins that are not our own.